This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on Talk Louisiana, we'll visit with East Baton Rouge Parish Metro Councilman Matt Watson. He'll comment on the sudden and tragic death of his fellow councilman, Buddy Amoroso, who was killed Saturday in a bicycling crash in St. Francisville. Amoroso, longtime politico in his hometown, was 61 years old. Law professor and political advisor Susan Nelson will also talk about the death of Buddy Amoroso, who was a former opponent of hers. We'll get Susan Nelson's take on President Trump's nomination next week to the U.S. Supreme Court. Fairleigh Cook Jackson of Preserve Louisiana on the possibility of a significant budget cut to the old governor's mansion where her organization is based, and Jim Caldwell of the Baton Rouge Airport on new options for holiday travelers. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and hope you had a good weekend. And it was a somber weekend in Baton Rouge. Veteran politico Buddy Amoroso is gone at the age of 61. Man trying to stay in good shape and riding to St. Francisville, and he didn't come back. He was hit by a motorist who also hit another person with Buddy Amoroso, who is in serious condition himself. And Buddy Amoroso leaves quite a family and quite a legion of admirers, and here to talk about it for a little while are Matt Watson, Metro Councilman who served with Councilman Amoroso, and Susan Nelson, who actually ran against Buddy Amoroso when he sought to become a member of the Louisiana House of Representatives, and that race at the time was won by Daryl Orso. But Buddy Amoroso leaves quite a void, and Susan speaks as a law professor and is a politico from the other side of the political spectrum. He certainly was a conservative stalwart and a big man in many ways, big heart and big personality. And Matt Watson, the world is a lot less pleasant without him.
That's absolutely true. Even if you ever disagreed with Buddy, you probably left the meeting learning a little bit about his kids, talking about your kids, and having a laugh about something in the meantime, and then finding something that you could have some common ground on in the future, realizing that you probably had some philosophical differences about something that started the meeting. But he had a self-deprecating sense of humor. I'm going to miss his laugh most of anything, because he had a hair trigger when it came to his laugh. And it was wonderful to spend time with the guy. Truly genuine person, great guy, and loved his family dearly.
And I'm sure you were shocked when you heard the news.
Oh, my. Yes. Absolutely a tragic shock. And, I mean, anything tragic like this happens, I mean, you just feel absolutely helpless, and you don't want to believe that it's true, and you reach out to try to get some kind of confirmation to find out what's going on, because you certainly don't want to have something like that gets spread around. That may not be the case, but unfortunately, it turned out to be the case.
And yesterday, bicycle advocates, his family, friends, gathered for a memorial. You were on hand for that.
I did.
I suspect that was an amazing event.
It was very nice, and I got to tell you, as we rode around town, we started at Galvez Plaza, rode to the state capitol, down the levee, and then back around, and it was absolutely silent. And I've never been on a bike ride, and certainly have never been on a bike ride with Buddy Amoroso that was silent. But it was silent, and we all came back, and I'm sure that y'all saw in other media outlets when Miss Denise, who has got to be one of the strongest women I've ever seen, and certainly in his wife in recent memory, to come up and speak directly to the folks that came out and thanked them and tell them how much it meant for them to come out and do this. And then like any wonderful mother, like she is, talking to everyone there with tears in her eyes, telling everyone else to be careful out there. And that was her main message, was that Buddy loved everybody and he wants y'all to be careful. And I want y'all to be careful.
Well, he was a Baton Rougean true and true, Broadmoor class of 1976, leaves quite a void on the council.
He does.
He not only was one of those people who would vote quite often with the conservative majority, but one of those guys who could bring a few people along with him with the strength of his arguments.
Certainly, certainly. And we're going to miss him. Folks from either side of the aisle, and you know, Democrats, Republicans, regardless of where you're from, always knew that you could talk with them, chit-chat with them. We could find common ground in a lot of places and push things forward. I mean, he certainly worked with me on a lot of things. He worked in coordination with a lot of Democrats as signatories on ordinances or legislation that he's trying to get across. He just worked with everybody.
And Susan Nelson, I mentioned that you actually were an opponent of his in a race, which usually brings out the worst in people, but you came away liking him.
Not Buddy Amoroso. You know, he's the kind of person, and he's the kind of person that we frankly need more of in politics, where he tried to find common ground with people no matter what. And he was always respectful. He was not one of those people who drew a line in the sand and said, this is where I am. He's like, let's talk about how we can get there together. So he is truly the kind of soul that we need in the political discourse today, especially. And so he will be greatly missed.
Yeah, well, I found out from Elizabeth Dent, who called me early Saturday afternoon. And, of course, Buddy and Fred Dent, they go back to the old Tax Busters day. And I mentioned the Fred, who died in 2010, he was probably waiting on the other side for Buddy Amoroso, and I'm sure Matt Watson, wherever it is, it was on the right side.
that's definitely true. And Miss Elizabeth lives a couple blocks away from me, and every time I see her, I'm either with Buddy and I run into her at a restaurant, or if I run into her, she had just spoken with Buddy. They were good friends and remained really good friends.
877-217-5757 is your number, 297-5633, and talk@talklouisiana.org. And I know Buddy had a lot of friends in this area, and he leaves an amazing void, and some folks, I'm sure, would like to remember him for good reason. And he's one of those people who you just have great comfort knowing he's there, even if you don't encounter him very often, Susan.
You know, I was really taken by Gary Chambers' Facebook post where he showed the text that Buddy had sent him, and how much he said, you know, Buddy reached out to me after the shootings here in East Marriage, you know, two summers ago. And, you know, he talked about him as being someone who said, where we agree, let's work to move Baton Rouge forward. And that's how Buddy was.
877-217-5757, Ray in Prairieville. Hi, Ray. You're on the air with Matt Watson and Susan Nelson. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking the call. Just like to ask his guest if they have any ideas how we can improve bicycling in the Baton Rouge and even Ascension area, which I'm from. We have terrible shoulders on the road, no shoulders. The prime example is one of the beautiful places to bicycle would be down Highland Road, has zero shoulder. Students from LSU going to LSU cannot safely ride a bicycle.
Matt, what do you think? Is this something the Metro Council will take up in earnest now?
Well, I can guarantee you that it will. I mean, it's absolutely a shame that it takes something this tragic to motivate. But I was speaking with Mark Martin, who was in Bike Baton Rouge yesterday, and with Vineeth Iyengard, with the mayor's office. And obviously I spoke with Ingolf Partenheimer, who's our head traffic engineer, on Saturday. We know that we've got safety issues here. It's definitely going to – well, it's brass tacks. It's going to cost money to build anything. I would love to see as much as possible. It's very convenient to build sharrows for bikes along roadways. But even in certain situations where you've got that sort of separation, but it's still on the road, maybe we want to add some bike paths that are dedicated just for walking and pedestrians rather than putting folks next to roadways that I mean, even people in other vehicles aren't necessarily safe. I mean, it seems strange to me that you have a road with a single dash line down the middle with vehicles traveling at each other at 55, 75 miles an hour, and then maybe adding pedestrians or telling them that they're safe to be on either side.
But in the case of Buddy and his friend, they did everything right.
Absolutely.
To protect themselves.
As we discussed before we went on the air, I mean, I was struck by a car when I was a kid shooting out of a driveway without looking both directions. And as an adult, I looked back on that saying, you know, I can understand, I can wrap my mind around it, and it gives me a chill that happened. But at the same time, I made a mistake as a child to do this, and I can understand that had I not made the mistake, that wouldn't have happened. But now I think about Buddy and Tom out on Highway 66, and if they did everything right, there's no amount of acting safely or wearing protective clothing or where they position their bikes is going to change anyone else's behavior, like the vehicle that came up behind them.
Yeah, I think we need to do more driver education and more talks about, you know, distracted driving. I don't know why this guy didn't see them on the road. Was he looking at his cell phone? Was he changing the radio station? You know, I think a lot of people get out on these country roads and they drive as fast as they can. And I think, you know, we really need to educate people that they need to be careful, particularly on Saturdays when bike riders might be out or things like that are going on, and just try to make the roads a little bit safer for folks.
And this area, Matt and Susan, it's a different road, but it's the same area 3 years ago where an LSU professor, Lisi Oliver, was killed, and she was walking her bike after it broke down and got hit. And
correct.
You just never know.
Well, we had, you know, I've...
But we do have to take a break.
Okay.
And we'll return with Matt Watson and Susan Nelson. Your number is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. You can email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. And a few more minutes with Matt Watson, Metro Councilman, and Susan Nelson, a lawyer and political advisor and former opponent of Buddy Amoroso, who was killed Saturday in a bicycle crash in St. Francisville. He and his riding companion, Thomas Clement, were hit from behind, and Clement is hospitalized with serious injuries. He's 71 years old, and Matt, you noted that it obviously was a violent collision. You look at the scene, and it's apparent they were hit and hit hard.
And it's just terrible. And I would almost, you know, it's just terrible. And we're talking about, you know, what were they even aware before they were struck of anything coming up? I mean, having ridden a bicycle at speed with a helmet on and the wind in your ears, and I know Tom, and I've spoke with Tom a whole lot. And I would imagine on that bike ride, Buddy was doing a whole lot of listening to Mr. Tom, telling him what needed to be improved in both District 8 and around the parish. So I'm sure they were deep in conversation, and with the wind coming up, I don't know if the speed that the vehicle was coming up behind him. They were both doing absolutely what they loved.
And Susan, I imagine this is one of those stories that will last more than a few days. And I know of no arrangements yet for
no, I spoke with Miss Denise last night, his wife, and there's going to be a private family funeral at the gravesite. And then afterward, there's going to be a very much needed public memorial service that so many people are going to want to be part of. And it's going to be something that I think the whole community needs, because whether you knew him or not, I'm going to tell you, we all lost something.
And the same day that Buddy Amoroso lost his life in St. Francisville in a bicycling accident, a pedestrian at Florida and North Eugene was killed walking across the street by a police officer who apparently did not see him. An on-duty female police officer, not yet named, hit John Payne, age 51, and Payne was trying to cross the road when he was hit. And it is obvious that walking, biking, or driving, those are far more dangerous than flying, and most people, they're fearful of flying, but yet the most dangerous part of any trip is the trip to the airport and back.
Absolutely. You know, I think this maybe hits home for the distracted drivers that we have pretty strong problem with here in the state. You know, I see police officers, and I know they have their computer screens inside their cars, and they're getting a lot of information and doing things. So, you know, that may be something that the police department needs to look at, since this is now the second time that a pedestrian's been struck by a police cruiser in recent years. That might be something that they might need to look at.
Well, Matt, we'll let you get rolling. I know it's a tough day for you, and certainly we'll have you back soon to talk about council business. But what happens to his seat?
Well, obviously, as tough as it is, there's the matter of fact of the business at hand, that the folks that live in District 8 currently sadly don't have any representation in the legislative branch of the government of the parish. So those folks are grieving, same as everyone else, but you know, as far as the function of government, they need to have someone there to reflect their opinion and the decisions of the parish. And we're going to have to, sadly, but move forward on or watch it move forward by those powers that be in District 8 and those folks that would want to be come up and possibly
I think there'll
run.
Be a special election.
Yeah, there's going to have to be, I would imagine. But in the meantime, I don't know if we're going to have an appointment. So, I mean, an election is going to take some time, and there's obviously some things coming up that are going to require a vote that, you know, pretty heavy, you know, instances of taxes, both property tax pitch on the Bridge Center and the sales tax and on the infrastructure. Their District 8 is going to have some representation in that.
All right, before you go, Clayton on Essen's been waiting patiently. Clayton, I want to get you in before Matt leaves, and we'll have Susan here for a few more minutes as well. Hi, Clayton.
Good morning. Appreciate you taking my call. I manage Capital Cyclery on Essen Lane. Was Buddy's bike mechanic. Knew him well. We're, you know, the community's a bit shaken up by this event. One issue that we all have is the lack of repercussions for these things. So if you go back in history, the accident that happened on Perkins Road a couple years ago, Nathan Crossan, that person isn't going to reside as long as they should in jail. Colin Goodyear got hit on River Road years ago. He's the reason why we have the 3-foot law. That person didn't reside in jail as long as they should have. It's a distracted driving issue. It is a repercussion issue for those people who commit these actions.
And you knew Buddy as a customer, and I would imagine you, like most everybody else, liked him immensely.
The man had no ill intention about him.
Absolutely.
He approached, I'm also on the board for Bike Baton Rouge. I can't speak for them, but he approached me a week ago, 2 weeks ago or so, said, hey, I want to get involved. How can we make riding in this town safer? You know, we don't provide facilities for people to walk or ride. If you ride a bike, you have a right to get to work. You have as much right to the road as anybody driving. There's no denying that. Mm-hmm. What we don't have here is facilities for these people. We keep making roads wider. We don't allow people to put crosswalks on them. We can't put crosswalks on Florida Boulevard. And those are the issues he wanted to tackle. He would just kind of, he's been a cyclist for years. I've known him for a very long time. It was a recent thing where he said, hey, everyone's going to Tara Wicker, great person, Donna Collins Lewis, great person to help with this. I need to become more involved. And it's just tragic that he started that journey with us oh so recently ago, and now he's been removed.
Thank you, Clayton.
Clayton, thank you so much for calling in. And I know that I'm sorry for your loss as much as anyone else's, and since you've got the opportunity to know Buddy outside of politics, and that's really where you really got to know a great person in Buddy Amoroso. I agree with you that it's very difficult to get crosswalks and things of that nature on major roads. I'm working currently with traffic engineering, and it's been difficult to just get a crosswalk from the Westminster subdivision across Jefferson Highway so that folks that can see a grocery store can't walk safely over to the grocery store. So we're working on a way to get a pedestrian crossing. You can walk your cycle or ride your bike across to go over there. But it's you've got to you have to have the will, and you have to continue pressure and talk to the right people and stay on it. And it can happen. It never happens quick enough, and you've got to be very creative. I mean, as you know, I hate the word, but I'm a politician, and in this respect, and how I'm working with folks that do the physical work of traffic engineering and what's built on the road, but I have to be very creative in talking to folks in neighborhoods and saying you can't cross where Drusilla crosses Jefferson Highway. We've got to have you cross where you would enter I-12 because there's too much traffic activity at the four-way intersection there that's going to be dangerous even with, you know, stopping traffic. So you've got to communicate with folks and work with everybody to try to get things done and keep pushing.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt. And Susan, you. Before you leave, our original intent when we invited Susan today was to talk about President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court, which is next Monday, he says. And a New Orleans native, Amy Barrett, is considered one of the top two candidates by many right now. She is a graduate of Rhodes College and of Notre Dame Law School. She is not an Ivy Leaguer. She would be the only member of the court who did not graduate from an Ivy League university. Born in New Orleans 1972, so she's 46, graduated from St. Mary's Dominican High School, and is on the record as being against the Roe v. Wade decisions. What do you think?
Well, I'm a little troubled that she went on the record about being against Roe v. Wade because typically good judges want to look at the facts and the details of the case and make a case-by-case decision as any good jurist should. There's a number of nominees. The hypocrisy of the Republicans this time when they stopped President Obama because it was too close to an election, but yet they're rushing to make sure this gets done before the midterm elections is kind of ironic to me.
Well, we'll pick up and spend a few more minutes with Susan Nelson and also hear from Fairley Jackson of Reserve, Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And local dials, 297-5633. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. With us in studio for a little while longer is Susan Nelson, law professor at Southern University, and also practices law in how many states?
Three. I just renewed all of my bar licenses Saturday night.
Well, this was a stunning development last week when Justice Anthony Kennedy decided to call it a day after 30 years on the high court. The senior member of the court, 81, but younger than some other members of the court. Were you shocked?
I don't know that I was shocked. I mean, when I saw the picture in the paper, I kind of looked at him and he looks tired. Naturally, if you're 81 years old, at some point you're going to want to stop working and having to be somewhere every day. So, you know, I'm not incredibly shocked by it. An 81-year-old not wanting to work anymore, that's not incredibly shocking.
I think he's younger than Ruth Bader Ginsburg, though.
Well, Ruth's made out of a different stock.
And if Ruth were to quit, imagine what would happen to the court as far as the direction.
Yeah, I think everyone in America of my persuasion is sending Ruth some vitamins right now and praying for her good health.
Well, I saw yesterday that Susan Collins of Maine says she will not vote for a justice who is on the record against Roe v. Wade, which means if she stays true to her word, she would not vote for Amy Barrett. But there's a strong possibility that Joe Manchin in West Virginia will. Some other Democrats, the Doug Jones in Alabama, might. It would seem very hard to stop any nominee of President Donald John Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's going to set up a bad scenario for folks in different states, and particularly here in the South, where access to reproductive care for women is scant at best. We're going to see some real issues with women's health and women, quite honestly, dying without access to reproductive health services.
Well, it was a stunning development. Justice Kennedy was an appointee of Ronald Wilson Reagan, and we're going to find out a whole lot of information about him, and he was often the swing vote on many cases, and there are now stories about his son's connection to Donald Trump and Deutsche Bank. And Susan, I think that's a story that's going to have have legs.
I mean, I certainly don't like the looks of it, that there's been a number of loans made to him over the years that no one else would make. That's certainly...
To him being the president.
To the president, correct. For quite honestly, failed businesses. You know, usually when you fail in a business, and I think every woman and minority out there who's tried to scrape to get business loans knows how hard it is to get a business loan. But apparently, if you're a business failure, you know, all you need is the right person at a particular bank, and you're golden. I think that certainly leads to some questions that I think the American public should have answered.
And before we leave, I know your good friend is Scott Wilfong, and believe it or not, Scott is about as far to the right politically, I would say farther right than Susan is to the left, and Susan would be accused by some of being a liberal, but she is a very good friend of Scott, and Scott was full of vim and vigor and made some comments that were quite stunning, and Treva in St. Francisville writes, Jim, shame on you for not calling out Scott Wilfong when he used derisive nicknames for women politicians. You wonder why women don't seek office more often? Certainly doesn't help when they're continuously attacked verbally in ways most men never experience. The effect is usually for women to grow weary and pull back, just what a lot of men desire. I know vicious comments and outrageous opinions certainly are ruling the day, but I hope it is fueling other women, no matter the party, to become more active. And I also hope respectable men and women will step up and defend when personal attacks are uncalled for any person or entity. Today's national discourse does not reflect the values most Americans fight and live for, and we need to each do our part to change the course.
Well, you know, Scott's come to my defense on this show a few times, too, when folks, when callers called in and made disparaging comments about me. Sometimes Scott gets very passionate and says things that I don't think he really means, just for the theatric effect of being on the far right. I think he's one of those type of pontificators. I think when you get right down to it and you're talking to him about the issues, he is supportive of women candidates, and certainly he's actually encouraged his wife to run for office in the past. So I'm not really sure that you need to put a whole lot of stock in what Scott says.
Well, we live in a Trumpian world where sometimes I think all of us, and the president, let's begin with him, he says things that if he had a chance to think about it, I hope he would not say them the way he has.
Yeah, again, I think a lot of times he's, you know, he thinks this is, you know, talk radio or Moon Griffon or one of those kind of shows where he can be a political dramatist.
I was talking about the president in this case.
Well, the president just says whatever comes out into his mind. So.
And Hampton Peel, a listener, notes that the president last week when he opened his rally in Fargo, North Dakota, the warm-up song before the president took the stage was the Rolling Stones' Sympathy for the Devil. That's quite an unusual entree.
And yet the religious right, he is their man. So, you know, I don't know how to explain that.
Okay. Thank you, Susan Nelson. Always good to see you.
Thank you, Jim.
And in studio now is Fairleigh Cook Jackson, the executive director of Preserve Louisiana. And there is a big story emanating right now regarding funding for the old governor's mansion. And this is state funding under the fiscal 2019 budget. There stands to be a substantial cut, not only to the governor's mansion, but also to the Shaw Center. What's going on, Fairleigh?
Well, you know, this isn't a new discussion, as we all know, the state of our state's budget. But here we are again, and while we thought we were safe from that fiscal cliff issue, we received a letter dated June 14th, basically asking us to incur significant costs for operating the state-owned governor's mansion. And my understanding is that's the similar story with the Shaw Center. So two, you know, iconic cultural entities in downtown Baton Rouge facing this this big blow right now.
$100,000 for the old governor's mansion and $800,000 for the Shaw Center. Mm-hmm. And having been part of nonprofits, those numbers are the kinds of numbers that can shut you down.
Absolutely. I mean, we're a small organization. You know, that's about a fourth of our budget, to be completely honest. And, you know, we own the assets of the old governor's mansion, but cash-wise, we're not big. So, yeah, it's a pretty significant amount. you know, we're staying positive and working with the commissioner's office. And I feel that the support that we have across the board for the work that we do locally and then on the state level and nationally, I feel confident we're going to work it out. It's just one of those kinks.
Commissioner of Administration Jay Darden has given the operators of Preserve Louisiana, Fairley, and the Shaw Center to October 1st to come up with a way to pick up a greater share of their operating expenses. You can only do so much. And these numbers, as you note, are big numbers. What can be done between now and October 1?
Well, I think a lot can be done. You know, I think this is a great chance for our government entities to really take a look at where they're spending their money. So if we were to look at what these numbers actually are, for example, grounds maintenance of at the total of $34,000 a year, we're not a very large building. We don't have a lot of maintenance in that area. So it's a bigger question of where is our money going?
What does it cost? $34,000?
$34,000 a year.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place, but it's a big place.
Right, and I'm actually taking care of the roses these days. So.
Well, a listener asks if you still do, like, weddings there. Do you make some money from special events?
We do. You know, that's part of our kind of entrepreneurial side of our organization. And we, as I mentioned, we own the contents of the museum. So we do operate the museum as an event venue, but it's still a small amount. I mean, we're looking at if we were just to make that revenue, this $100,000 from weddings alone, we'd have to add about 50 weddings to our calendar mm-hmm. for the next year, and that's just not possible.
Well, many may not realize that even though part of the penny sales tax was voted favorably, 4.45% of it, there is still a hole in the budget, which means there will have to be cuts, and this is apparently one of the areas being looked at strongly. $800,000 to the Shaw Center. There are a lot of offices there, as we know, a prominent restaurant. And the Manship Theater. I would think that the Shaw Center could be in peril with that kind of a cut.
Well, and I'd like to add the LSU Museum of Art,
that
my
right.
former
exactly.
place of
Certainly.
Employment. And I think the hard thing is, you know, when these cooperative endeavor agreements were written, you know, the idea is that there's an equal value given back to the state. But when you're talking about cultural entities that have an impact, you know, beyond just the downtown area, like us, for example, and Manship, LSU Museum of Art, it's very hard to quantify what we actually return to the state money-wise. So it's a bigger picture that I just hope people and our friends of the state will kind of wrap their minds around.
Susan is still here, so she says she'd like to get in on this. What,
you know, what? At 0.45, you know, pennies where we ended up at the end of the session, you know, there was a lot of things that were left unfunded. And I think it just goes to the question or goes to the point in Louisiana that we just can't have nice things. They won't make the decisions for us to have the nice things that we could have. Cultural things like the museum and art museums and things like that are what draw people who want to come to big areas. I was just in Toronto last week, and you know, there's just so much culture and things for people to do, and that's what draws mm-hmm. business. So, you know, yeah, maybe you can't explain it dollar for dollar, but there's this sense that comes in with things like good roads and mm-hmm. healthcare and things like this that we still are not paying for with our current budget.
And I'd like to mention retention, too. You know, I mean, we see all of our bright minds and talent leaving Louisiana. We need the nice things to keep them here.
Yeah.
877-217-5757 is your number, and we'll spend a bit more time with Fairley Cook Jackson. The state has covered the operating costs for the old governor's mansion for 20 years and the Shaw Center since it opened in 2005. So this is a big development. In the Business Report story from Stephanie Regal last week, John Davies of BRAF declined to comment, but it's going to be interesting. We'll talk about it. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number. A few more minutes with Fairley Cook Jackson of Preserve Louisiana. And on deck is Jim Caldwell of the Baton Rouge Airport. It's busy holiday week, and we'll talk with him about what's going on. There's some new options for travelers. And a note also that Baton Rouge Airport is an underwriter for WRKF. But the old governor's mansion faces a potential $100,000 cut. Fairley's trying to work it out with the administration, and she has until October 1st to offer some ways to make this more palatable. And I would think Jay Darden would be very supportive of the arts. This isn't something he wants to do, I'm sure. It's just a matter of you counting beans, and right now these are austere times.
Absolutely. Jay Darden has been a proponent and supporter of historic preservation for years, and to your point, he has made it noted that he does value what we do.
Mm-hmm. We're coming up on the 125th birthday of one Huey Pierce Long on August 30th. Is the Preserve Louisiana getting involved with this?
We sure are. So we are accepting nominations for our annual preservation awards this year. And this year we are going to have our actual award ceremony on his birthday. So we'll be celebrating at the old Governor's Mansion, all of the wonderful preservation projects around the state. And those are cultural projects and architectural projects, of course. So if any of your listeners have some great projects they'd like to nominate, we encourage them to go to our website.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure, and I have a feeling we'll have occasion to talk again very soon. But Huey Long, August 30th is like next month.
It is.
So a month and 28 days, we'll be celebrating the 125th birthday of the Kingfish.
The man behind the old Governor's Mansion.
That's true. He lived there.
And had it built.
Yeah. Probably spent the last night of his life there. And last night was at a hospital at the old Our Lady of the Lake, but the last night before he was shot was probably at the old...
Well, I think at that point he was spending a lot of time at the Heidelberg.
Was he?
He was.
Really?
Yes. I might be wrong there.
Really?
But, yeah. It would not surprise me if he had been at the Heidelberg that night.
He probably was at both places.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the Heidelberg and the old Governor's Mansion are still alive and well, and also alive and well is the Baton Rouge Metropolitan Airport. And Jim Caldwell is with us, the spokesman for the airport. And before we get to some of the new holiday options, Jim, I see that passenger emplanements up, that's departing passengers, up 3.2% in May over the same month of 2017. This is a significant development because May is usually a very big month, and this was a significant achievement for the Baton Rouge Airport.
Yes, we were up last year about 4%, and we're forecasting to be up this year approximately 5%, which I think we'll make.
And I would think June's trend follows that of May, but obviously May is the last month I have available to me, but... it's the second largest airport in Louisiana, we know that, in the Upper Gulf region by passenger volume, and there are now some new options. This was announced a few days ago. You can fly from Baton Rouge to Austin and to Orlando nonstop.
That's right, on VIA Airlines. It's service starts September 13th. I wish we could have worked it out with them to start a little sooner, but... starts September 13th. They go into Orlando Sanford, which some people might not be as familiar with. It's a little north of the city, probably another 20-minute drive from the parks. But the benefit is it's a very easy airport. I mean, they've got terminal front rental car pickups, just like Baton Rouge. You don't have to ride a bus to the rental car center and take an extra half an hour for that. The security lines are a breeze. So you may have 15 to 20 minutes to your drive, but you probably knock an hour off your time at the airport.
And these new options to Austin, as you note, they're not available for July 4th, but they will be available in a couple of months. It's not an everyday thing, is it?
No, it's not. It's the industry. There've been cutbacks since 2007 on flights. You know, lots of studies and articles about it. Particularly at smaller airports, and as I probably have mentioned before on the show, you got four airlines, American, Delta, United, and Southwest, that control 86% of the seating capacity in the country. So it's, the fewer airlines to recruit, and, it's more of a challenge now. And, of course, it gets complicated with the pilot shortage and those type things. But we're thrilled to get VA Airlines. If people want to book them, it's flyviaair.com. And the good thing is they're in the GDS, what you call the global distribution systems, the systems the travel agencies use and the online travel agencies, like Expedia and Travelocity and Orbit. So they'll be displayed and be able to book in multiple sources. And that always improves things for an airline. You know, there are just some companies, if they can't book an airline through their what they call their self-booking tool, which uses those GDS systems, they're not going to go out of travel policy and book them. So it makes it much more difficult when the website is the only option. But certainly people can go to flyviaair.com and book via the website, but we also have other options with them.
Malcolm in Mid-City notes that the planes, and for some anyone who's traveled, this is something that is noticeable and should be mentioned, that the planes leaving East Baton Rouge, the airport these days, are much better than they used to be.
That's right. They you know, always use this term upgauged, and which simply means bigger aircraft. But most of our regional jets now are the bigger regionals that have first class, premium coach and coach. You know, United's got some of the Embraer 175s coming in, which great aircraft. It's there's more individual seat width and pitch on it than many 737s, and Americans gone to Embraer. They've gone to pretty much all CRJ 700s, which are first class coach. And Delta's bigger regional jets, a lot of CRJ 900s and 700s, which again are first premium coach and coach. We had 3 717s, which are full size Boeing jets, and just a quirk of scheduling related to summer seasonal stuff and pilot shortage and all that. Their planning person that we deal with said we lost the 3 717s for July and August, but then they come back in September and are scheduled for as long as they have the schedule in advance from then on. It was just a temporary thing. Now they're replacing them with larger regional jets, mm-hmm. but if people notice the big Boeing 717s are not there in July and August. It's just with Delta, it's just temporary.
All right. Another listener asks about the number of places that you can fly to directly from Baton Rouge. How many are there?
There's, of course, hub cities, American to Charlotte, which is their second largest hub, American to Dallas, which is their largest hub in the world, and these are, period, some of the largest hubs in the world, United to the Houston hub, and Delta, of course, to their Atlanta hub, and then starting in September, we'll have the Orlando and Austin flights.
And last time you were on the show, a listener emailed me right at the finish line, and she has been kind enough to send me another email today. Emma, she was concerned about the lighting at the airport and the parking area when she left, saying it was a dangerous situation, and she notes that it has been improved dramatically. What's happened in that vein?
Oh, I'm glad that she noticed it. Yeah, we completely replaced the lighting because it was a concern, and so we've gone to new lighting that makes it one of the brightest parking garages I think you'll go into. It's dramatically better than it was before.
Now, you obviously compete to some extent for travelers with the airports in New Orleans and in Lafayette. What's the biggest sales pitch for traveling from Baton Rouge?
Well, convenience is the one of the primary ones. You know, if you got we're short drive, terminal front parking, you know, fast security clearance, just much easier. You can get here an hour or so. You know, we say at least an hour, but between an hour and hour and a half beforehand, so not as much time getting to the airport or at the airport, less stress. And, you know, we did a study a few years back that showed the average business traveler taking the average salary, the cost of driving a car, whether it's a company with a rental or reimbursing mileage or a personal car with the wear and tear, And the average person spends $200 in drive into an alternate airport like New Orleans. So you really have to knock that $200 off before you're really even, you know, saving anything. And we always encourage people to check. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes fares are lower out of Baton Rouge. Many times they're very comparable, sometimes less out of New Orleans. But just check. You know, and of course, you know, if you can support the local airport, airlines follow passengers. The best way for us to get more service is to have full flights on the existing flights. If you don't have high load factors, you know, the airlines are going to say, well, your flights already aren't that full. Why do you need more? You know, so supporting, at the end of the day, the passengers to a large extent determine your air service.
VIA Airlines was founded in 1997, and you can visit flyviaair.com for more information. Another listener says, how long does it take to get to Orlando from Baton Rouge via VIA Airlines? And I'm looking, leaving Baton Rouge at 1:48, arriving at 4:30, so that's Eastern time, so that's actually an hour and 42 minutes. That's not bad.
No, not bad. Nonstop, you can't beat it. They're lower fares. They're a quality lower fare airline in the sense that you know, you're not going to get nickel and dime for, you know, paying for a seat assignment, paying to carry something on board. You know, it's paying to pre-board. So they're kind of a hybrid in that they're more like the traditional carriers in that regard. But
we do have to roll. But thank you, Jim Caldwell. Congratulations on the new routes. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow.
For
stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.